Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of a Appleton Civilization site.
Dan Quick.
Moses Snedis.
Imran Siddiqui.
And Makalua.
Guest co-hosts Matt Nugag-Chi and Lee Snotty Chandelier.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Matt.
Who's Matt?
Who is this loser?
Oh. We're all losers.
So I think we've established that everyone knows who each other is.
Who's this Dan guy?
He's the one who always ruins the show.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Polycast episode 32, of Poulton's official podcast. Now going under the subtitle, Not Civ Revcast. I am Imran Siddiqui, Imran Siddiqui on the forums. Joined by, unfortunately, Dan Q.
Hello.
Daniel Quick is his actual name, but we tried to not say that because it brings out the evil monsters if we say it three times in a row. Also joining me is Wadder Snyders, the cutest on the forums.
Woo, that's me.
And Makula.
Where's my coffee?
And we have two guest hosts on this episode. We have Nugag.
Hi there.
And Snotty.
Hello.
Snotty's real first name is Lee, and Nugag is Matthew, and we will refer to him thusly sometimes, perhaps. I want to talk about the first intro-outro topic.
You do?
That topic kicks ass. I'm sure if the rest of you click on it, you'll agree with me. As posted on our Appleton forums, Quillian seems to see a resemblance between Charlemagne of the Holy Roman Empire and the Burger King King. And if you look at pictures side by side on our forums, I think Sid has a predilection for Burger King.
They could be brothers. Can you mod in the Burger King?
Yeah, probably.
GDI Jedi 7 says, has anyone who saw the deleted thing Akazaz posted noticed that Elizabeth has the same skin and hair as Ronald McDonald?
By the way, here's what I'd like to wonder. Are there six other GDI Jedis on our forums? In the news today, we discussed an intellectual's review of Civilization IV and discussed whether or not Civ was a macroeconomic simulation in great depth. Also, we discussed about how Civ IV Complete is now available outside the Americas and what that means for all the individuals who bought all of the component parts separately.
In the modcast, we discussed the use and abuse of gifting units and whether the Wonders list was biased towards the United States.
In the research lab this week, we talked about whether we should have war weariness for your workers and troops, about a potential parasite unit, the spy promotions that we all want, and whether peaks and ice could be a little more useful in-game.
And in the mailbag, we talk about the very long and boring voicemail.
Well, that's going to bring him back. Way to go.
We answer a voicemail from a Mac user, an email from a very, very enthusiastic fan, and we answer comments from the forums.
Well, I hope I haven't jumped the gun there.
We like that type of initiative. That's why I talk so much. No one else wants to.
No one else gets a chance to.
That was good, Lee. Only Mackie is annoyed because she loves the modcast.
No, I'm not.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Dan is always trying to create controversy where there is none. Sheesh.
One big happy family, hey?
Well, we try. Well, sort of.
We are family.
Yeah? One big dysfunctional family, maybe.
Dysfunctional, yes. We put the fun in dysfunctional.
The news?
News.
News. An intellectual's review of Civilization IV.
I believe Wetter knows something about this.
I do.
I hope so.
I tried to stay away from the flames, so I'm not really sure what that whole thing was about.
What? You wrote the news item.
Yes, the news item, not the ensuing flame war.
Flame wars in Civ 4 general?
Yep.
No.
Big one.
Biggest one we've had in a while.
All right. Have you?
Woo!
I mean, that's unfortunate. People should get along.
Too late, Tyrion. You've been exposed for the evil tyrant you want to be.
Most of the argument seems to have been if Demon Weed is saying that Civ 4 is like a macroeconomic simulator, and that seems to have been what really stirred up the hornet's nest. With neither party seeming to want to find a middle ground at all on it. It's an interesting review, really quite interesting from a completely different point of view, away from gameplay point of view and how pretty the graphics are and things like that. So it does make interesting reading, but yeah, it's degenerated very quickly.
Well, Kichu Walker seemed to get quite riled towards the end. The other guy is eloquent, makes a well-spoken point. But the economic simulation in Civilization is very abstract, and you've got to use your imagination. That's what the problem seems to be.
The title of the blog, which is What You Should Think, might have something to do with it as well. A couple of people, have taken offense with that as well. So,
What You Should Think. Just about every Fulton poster could start their post with that one. I mean, just because this guy puts it in a blog doesn't make him any less pretentious than the rest of us. But I think it's funny that, you know, an intellectual's review, and his handle is Demon Weed. It's just kind of... I don't know.
I think actually my favorite part of the discussion I've seen is simply that the author of this piece, who goes, maybe this is his real name, but it's also his forum name on a poll, and that he actually gets in on the conversation. Like, as it happens, I wrote that piece.
Whoa, I like his second post. It starts off, can we just agree that the hostile duo are misinformed without engaging in Sisyphean task of demonstrating to them that they are wrong? Who do you think you're writing for?
People who actually know what Sisyphean meant.
The hostile duo.
JB says, my main complaint with the idea of Civ being a macroeconomic simulator was partially resolved with Beyond the Sword's random events. Shit happens in real life, and Civ has too much emphasis on being an enjoyable game. We put too much in quotation marks. Too much emphasis on being an enjoyable game. You're right. We should make it more like shit. What?
Enjoyable.
Fine. The game you'll hate playing. Yeah, that's gonna sell.
But this is for you. But I think, in some respects, Kusi may be correct, where calling it a macroeconomic simulator is a bit silly. Like said before, it has highly abstracted any type of economy in the game, and basically you trade a few resources, a handful of them, to get either stuff that you can make units with or to increase happiness or whatnot. It's nothing like, say, a game like, if any of you played Imperialism. So I think there's a point there that calling a macroeconomic simulator is a bit silly.
Then what is it?
Well, I think it's more of a, how should I say it, more of a political simulator rather than an economic one. The economics seem kind of thrown on at the end a little bit.
But the economics and the management of that kind of thing is one of the hats you have to wear in the Forex thing. So if not economics, then what to call it?
I don't know. Come up with something.
It's the macro non-economic simulator. How's that?
There you go.
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It sure does. Breezy in this thread here says, as a model, Civ's underlying mathematics are intentionally simple to make it playable rather than accurate and complete. I think they did a great job of coming with a model that is very simple and deterministic as you zero in, such as one food and two hammers or two food and one hammer, yet complex enough to seem like it is non-deterministic to a human player when larger pieces of the system are examined. For example, which will let me net a stronger economy in 20 turns, building a shrine or popping a technology with my great person? Never swap technology with your great person. Hardly, never.
Or option 3, build some units to go conquer your neighbor.
Assuming you can reach your neighbor. Oh.
Grow longer arms then.
I'll use my Cossacks to buy your capital. Thank you.
Exactly.
Civ 4 completable outside of the Americas.
Woo! It's cheap as well.
Yeah, it's really cheap now. It's under 70 bucks down here at the moment with all the pre-Christmas sales going on. It's a very nice little pack.
Yeah, so when you posted about that, Matt, didn't you have a real angry face? Is that because you pre-ordered at a higher price or something?
No, that's just because I bought each one the day it came out here, and I paid over 200 bucks for the whole lot.
Oh.
That's kind of how I'm feeling right now, looking at that.
So unless you live in North or South America, you can find Civilization Complete locally, which includes the original Civ and both the Warlords and Beyond the Sword expansion packs, on DVD. We asked both Civ 4 developer Firaxis Games and publisher Take-Two Interactive to let us know if and when it will become available in the Americas, but they're not able to tell us at this time if, let alone when, it will be available in Americas. Now, there was...
They're holding it hostage.
For Christmas.
They're saying, you will stop recording podcast and we will release it, but not until then.
There was a suggestion, I believe, by our own Stoopy369, who was on our last episode, wondering if perhaps it was available on GoGamer, which sells a lot of international game versions in the United States, at least. I had a look at GoGamer, and it's not listed there, but you can buy it off of Steam for $74.95 US, which, in practical terms, means it's not available, because who wants to get it off of Steam?
Well, some people...
You said $74?
Yeah.
Wow.
I did.
That like twice the price they charge even in the more expensive parts of Europe.
Or what you do is if you're inside the Americas, you have a nice little chat to someone on a certain forum that you play on who's living outside of the US, get them to buy it for you and send it over.
Or they'll take your money and then they'll be thinking about sending it to you and then they're like, I'm going to keep this for myself. It's so cool. In terms of a combined title, here in the Americas, you can get Civilization IV Gold Edition, which includes Civ IV and Warlords, a behind-the-scenes DVD, and that exclusive Civ IV poster by the renowned fantasy and sci-fi artist Greg Hildebrandt. But no Beyond the Sword. That will have to be purchased separately still.
I think the interesting question it does raise, or the inference it does imply, is because it's being released with all the expansion packs and being called Civ IV Complete, that's all she wrote. There's no more XPs coming. Which is just a guess. It looked pretty silly releasing something called Civilization 4 Complete, but there's more coming, so it's not quite so complete.
Civilization 4, more complete.
No, it'll be Civ 4 Platinum. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. They have no problems doing something like that. I mean, the decision whether or not to make another expansion is up to Firaxis, and the decision to make some package like this is up to 2K, so it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Although, of course, if the past has shown us anything, then, yeah, it makes sense that the next project would be Civ 5.
Woo! Let's start that rumor. It's Civ 5 time! Or we can start other rumors like, all right, they're making dinosaurs again.
Got news? Email news at apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Snoopy369, Alexander I, or Luminatus via Polton's forums at apolton.net/forums.
Modcast time?
Yep.
Yay! Woo!
Welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about various hot topics on all the different forums that talk about Civ.
Going over to our good friend the CFC to discuss the use of gifting units. I say good friends after meeting Mathos. I'm a changed man now. At least in the non-edited parts. The question asked by Aragami Frog is, how many have actually ever used to donate this unit ability while your unit is in another AI's territory?
On purpose.
Oh, yes, on purpose.
Well, I haven't.
Thanks to reloads, neither have I.
I think he also is asking, maybe there should be a mercenary feature, like you can make a trade agreement for 100 gold pieces if you sell them a couple warriors or something like that, or make some money that way.
If you are able to sell two warriors for 200 gold pieces, I'll salute you, sir.
Well, giving away missionaries and scouts on purpose, but that with the scouts, it's usually because I'll sail a caravel over there, I'll start exploring their territory, and then I'll manage to get their world map, and I don't really need them over there anymore.
There you go.
Here, you have a scout.
I think unit trading is a bit more useful in multiplayer, so you trade away your units, and then the person you've traded them to can use them at the same time as their army because of the simultaneous moves and everything. That's the only useful thing I can think of for trading in multiplayer.
Yes, because then perhaps the person that you're trading with in multiplayer, although it wouldn't be necessarily represented in the game mechanics, they might be appreciative to you.
Yes.
For that, and that might change their approach to you, at least for the next couple of turns.
So they kill off whoever they were killing, and they turn around and kill you.
Yes. You gift a friend some units to save their butt, and they save their butt, and then they say, "Now for the ultimate irony."
One guy in the thread mentioned giving a stack of tanks to an AI. I wonder how that would work, giving a big pile of units to an AI and just see what they did with them.
I've done it occasionally when single player, when AI is attacking another servant. I either don't want to get involved, which is rare, or can't get involved. Quite often we'll give them a few units to help them along the way, particularly if they're attacking the person who controls the Apostolic Palace. The sooner we get rid of that thing, the better. But not normally. Also mentioned in this thread, you know, if you've got a colony, it can be quite good to give them some workers. I don't really form colonies that often, so I'm too sure about how well it would work, but presumably it would ramp up their production quickly.
Yeah, and using the example that Argami Frog himself or herself provided, you know, saving that neighbor nation under attack could keep some kind of territorial buffer between you and the other nation if you're worried about that other nation.
Don't have Tokugawa near me.
If you're worried about the other nation, do you really want to be giving away your military?
Yes, perhaps it's better just the neighbor that's between you and the other guy that you have open borders with them, and you can just move your units in there to help defend, but you still have control.
Yeah, I mean, the situation I can think of where it would really be a good idea would be, again, Beyond the Sword, is when the Apostolic Palace is up and running and you're of the main religion that's running that, part of that religion, so you're a real brotherhood of the same creed, and you've got some heathen who's attacking somebody and you really don't want them to win, so maybe a way of doing it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have the option, at least.
I don't think there's much diplomatic benefit. I don't think there's any.
No. Certainly not in single player, only in multiplayer in that indirect sort of means. That was part of the other suggestion, was that if you do decide to gift the unit as opposed to, say, selling some units, that you would get an increase in diplomatic relations. I like that idea, so long as you don't just get an increase in diplomatic relations every time you gift a unit, because that could be exploited. Especially if it can be any kind of unit. Let's build some scouts and workers and just keep donating them. Whoa, plus 50, you really, really love me.
Thank you for your worker. Can we have another one?
I've brought your economy to a crashing halt by giving you 50 scouts that you have to pay upkeep for.
And there's another way you can exploit it.
Now, this dynamic cow suggests donating missionaries of your religion with whom you have open borders and who has theocracy. Just march those preacher men into the heathen nation, donate them, and watch them go to work. But wouldn't that only work where the civilization you're gifting missionaries to already has adopted the same religion as you, given they're running the theocracy religious civic, which means they're not heathens?
Well, you land a few in first and convert a few of their cities, and then you start gifting them ones. And then they'll start doing themselves, because they want the extra culture points, too. Sometimes. Or if they have no religion, all your religions got founded on one continent, and there's a continent that has no religion, yeah, then they'll like it.
Oh yeah, and you can only control three missionaries, so if you gift it, you can build another one.
Are wonders biased towards the United States? Old Caitlin M. at CFC says, Look at the wonders towards the end of the game. Hollywood, Broadway, rock and roll, the internet, Wall Street, Mount Rushmore. Apparently, she or he has a little beef with them. Thinks internet should be a technology, not a wonder, and thinks maybe it's strongly biased towards the United States. To which I would respond, have you seen the state of the world in the last 50 or so plus years? I'd imagine towards the end of game, having the United States have more wonders is, well, you'd kind of expect that.
If you're American.
On this list, I mean, you've got Hollywood, which was just has a huge cultural impact globally, so that one should be in there. Broadway, well, not so sure. Rock and roll, yeah, look, I mean, again, culturally, it's a global thing. Internet should definitely be on there. Wall Street, well, I mean, there's lots of other strong financial centers as well. And Mount Rushmore, some big heads carved on a mountain.
Looking at the list, the only one that you can really take, you know, if you really want to take umbrage with, maybe Mount Rushmore, but the rest of them, you can pretty much make a good case for them.
Well, I don't know about Broadway. There's plenty of other sort of kind of theatrical centers around the world which do the same thing, really. I mean, the game's made in the U.S. It sells more in the U.S., presumably. Of course, it's going to have a bit of a bias there.
The thing is, Ryan and I brought this up during development as well, and a lot of people seemed to agree and came up with a nice list of wonders to replace all these American things. And then CERN came along and said, this is an awesome threat, if it had been started 2 months ago. All the artwork had already been commissioned, so that's a bit too late at that point. I mean, I think most people, even the Frex developers, agree that there are too many American wonders. And in the expansion packs, I think they tried to overcompensate a little by adding a bit too many wonders, if you ask me. But yeah, what can you do? It's in there now. Yeah, I agree that Broadway, not really a major wonder, something you could easily replace. Mount Rushmore, I believe Ryan and I suggested to replace it with the Arc de Triomphe. Hollywood is definitely a keeper, I agree on that one. Apollo program also. I think that Pentagon was also something we wanted to replace, but I'm not sure what we wanted to replace it with. Rock and roll's obviously something that you can easily replace. West Point, that's another one. I think most non-Americans don't even know what that is. I suggested that Topkapi Palace is maybe not also the most famous thing in the world, but that would be a decent replacement for it. I'm not sure about some of the others, but I think we brought the number of U.S. wonders back to 5 or 6, which I think is a lot more reasonable. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense that latter part of the game you would have a couple of American wonders in there. It's obviously U.S. was very important, but there's also lots of other modern wonders in the game that are not American that you could include. In Asia, they're building a lot of impressive stuff these days. Look at Dubai, look at the Petronas Towers in Malaysia, those really awesome buildings. India, they're building some impressive stuff. So yeah, there's lots of other modern stuff you could include. A channel. The thing with wonders is, I mean, I have a file on my computer that over the years I collected, I don't know, maybe 400 or 500 potential wonders. So there's no lack of choices. It's just a matter of what names you want to stick on the gameplay effects that you're looking for.
Yeah, and some things like Apollo program, they just could have said generic space program, but everybody knows Apollo because of the moon. Yeah. So
I personally suggested that the Sputnik would be a decent replacement, but that wasn't a very popular suggestion.
So for those out there who are really annoyed by this overabundance of U.S. wonders,
there's got to be a mod somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, what modding choices are there out there? Does anyone know off the top of their head?
Would it not be easy enough to mod the names yourself? And then you can have whatever you like.
Yeah, if you just want to change the name, that's very, very easy. But of course, you'll have maybe Patronas Towers looking like the Pentagon. That's silly, maybe.
For the Pentagon, you'd probably want to replace it with another military-ish building.
Yeah, exactly, but you get the idea.
I'm not sure of any other military headquarter-type building.
Yeah, I think the Pentagon is something that you could keep. That wouldn't be easy to replace if you want to keep the exact same effect. West Point is something, like I said, I suggest Topkapi Palace myself. That was the home of the, what are they called, the Ottoman unique units.
The question, though, would the time frame be correct, I guess, if you replace West Point with an Ottoman?
More or less. You'd be off by 200 years, but it's not all that accurate anyway.
I like the list. I mean, they have some lists up here of how many are in each country. I'm a Mon Mahler, but I like the fact he put the Hermitage under the U.S.
Oops.
We took that over? Cool.
He did provide a disclaimer. He says, admittedly, I took my best guess at some of these, and I'll be 100% correct.
And I'm not sure if the United Nations should technically... Yeah, U.S. wonder.
He qualified it as headquartered.
Yeah, I disagree with that as well. And the internet is also pretty international.
True.
It just depends on which exact development you want to hang it on. Some are British, some are American.
Yeah, just because you consider, say, ARPANET to be the precursor or something, that doesn't mean that it's an American wonder, especially not today. You can't have any country really claim it today.
Yeah, and ARPANET is one of the many technologies that today make up the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Most people would probably regard that as the immediate predecessor, but it was a bit more involved, and some were developed in Switzerland at CERN, some were British.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a stretch, and the United Nations is a stretch.
And I think rock and roll also might be, I mean, yes, a lot of it's distinctly American. I mean, you have Elvis and Chuck Berry and all that stuff, but then you have the Beatles and you have the, you know, Rolling Stones,
exactly,
who are really two of the biggest bands in rock and roll, and I think you can consider that to be at least an American-European thing at this point.
I agree. Rock and roll, originally, that was actually called something else. The Dimension of Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Graceland?
Graceland.
Yeah. They renamed that probably to make it a little less U.S.-centric. So some efforts were made there to improve things after that discussion during development.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a coincidence that the Three Gorges dams look exactly like the Hoover Dam. So some efforts were made to make the list less U.S.-centric, but, you know, with the Wonder Art already commissioned, there was only so much that could be done.
The only change I'd really like to see personally is maybe you can change Mount Rushmore to, say, Big Ben or something.
Yeah, that would be a decent one.
Or make the Arc de Triomphe an actual wonder instead of, as it says, the icon for the national epic.
Yeah, well, national epic, that icon could easily be replaced.
Yeah.
I mean, Arc de Triomphe is also a military wonder, and Mount Rushmore, the effect is military, so that's why we hooked those effects up in a pre-release discussion.
Mm.
Sort of a good fit. But yeah, Big Ben, you could have any number of monuments from all over the world that could replace Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Kremlin, I'm not sure. Does Russia have anything except the Hermitage?
Russia?
Oh, it does have the Kremlin, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's nothing else in Russia. All right.
Oh, boy.
Should we discuss Research Lab?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And all of these, by the way, Research Lab topics are from Polton. Yay for us.
Woo!
Woo!
Welcome to the Research Lab, where we explore game concepts or ideas that are not in Civilization yet, but they might be in the future.
First one is war awareness for workers and troops. Your workers and troops never get affected by war awareness. Unmatrix 11 thinks they should, even if this requires some tweaking of the numbers, thinks the troops should fight worse and workers should have the occasional turn of strike in which they refuse to work. I like the idea of workers having an occasional turn of strike, though. That's kind of fun.
Or not.
Ooh!
Phoned!
Well, hey, a random event. One of those things where you have a choice of not paying them or some goal from your treasury to represent their wage increase or something like that.
I like that idea.
I do as well.
The other option should be rather than paying them, you send in the police with water cannons and batons.
Put them down violently, and then we can have like a little video showing our troops kicking the crap out of those protesters.
Some workers being repressed.
help, I'm being repressed.
Come see the violence inherent in the system.
Great.
Also, if you're going to have that, then it should also be linked to what kind of civics you're running. I mean, if you're running state property, which is a euphemism for communism, then you ain't going to be having any strikes.
Yeah. And we already have, if you're, say, running slavery, they have the slave revolt. So it'd be something very similar to that.
Yes, rather than it just simply be a note, oh, well, your workers refuse to work, and there's nothing that you can do with, next to the event system, you can interact. And I know some people are like, oh, but I hate events. Well, then just turn events off.
Exactly. It's an option for a reason.
The suggestion about troops might fight more poorly, that doesn't...
Your troops fight poorly enough, Dan.
Oh.
Oh.
Go Well, we've got that to a degree in the sense that if your troops are engaged in battle, they are going to have weariness in the form of being damaged. Now, they take time to heal, or you bring in a unit with the medic promotion, for example, but just because the war is going on and they fight more poorly, I'm not really sure how fun that would be, unless maybe somehow you wanted to tie it to an event.
The thing is, from a realism point of view, the morale of troops in the field is not insignificantly affected by the attitude of the population at home. So I guess the idea of finding some way to model that. The desire of the population to bring the troops home has an effect on the morale of the troops. So in cases of great war weariness, there's going to be a significant effect on the morale of the troops.
But don't we just get back to that whole gameplay versus realism point of thing? Really, would it be fun to have that happen?
Only if there was some way to reduce your great war weariness. No, it doesn't sound like much fun to me.
I suppose maybe if you had an option, like a random event or something in a specific city, and it said that, oh, the citizens really want their troops to come home, maybe those troops that were dispatched or built or whatever in that city, and then you could be given a random event to say, okay, you know, let them complete whatever they're currently doing and then have them sent home. That'd be the only way I'd think that maybe that might work. But just kind of a general across-the-board weariness? Nah. Gameplay versus realism. Well, you could see it now. Perhaps you had a knight, and you told it to attack a tank, and it went, no way, man. Parasite unit, of which I agree with Snoopy369 that let's find another name for it, but anyway, we can worry about that eventually. This famous guy user is looking to live up to his nickname by suggesting what he calls a parasite unit. For example, you build a knight, and then you build a worker, and you attach it to a knight, and it becomes a page, and then he moves up kind of like a bit of a promotion system where he becomes a squire, and then to the point from a squire becoming a knight after X number of turns, and a knight can have several pages at a time, so you don't have to worry about only getting one knight every X number of turns. Personally, I'm not liking the idea. Sorry, famous guy. You're infamous guy now.
He's dead to you, Dan.
He was never alive. Oh, does anyone like this idea?
For a scenario, maybe.
The real game is taking it more to an RPG kind of thing rather than what Civ's about.
Yeah, who said that in the thread? Someone else said that too. Willem, oh yes, this is a strategy game, not an RPG.
But for a mod kind of thing or for a scenario kind of thing, it's got some potential there.
And as I never play scenarios, it would be far removed from anything I would ever see, so that's fine by me. Forget about 15 minutes of fame, that was about 5 seconds.
Spy Promotions?
Yes. Our own Polycast transcriber, Ian Oz Hodges, suggests Spy Promotions, such as increased survivability, mission success increase, cheaper mission cost, faster movement, yada, yada, yada. I wonder what the yada, yada, yada promotion gets you. I'd like to learn more about that one.
The gift of gab. Well, we have air promotions now. Where's my spy promotions?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
It'd be handy, though, because if you had some spy unit that did a lot of successful missions, well, you'd have your James Bond, basically.
Jane Bond.
That, too.
Low Panzer says perhaps a spy could bribe a unit, either to change sides or just to go home, and Snoopy says, egads, we'd be back to the days of Civ 2 spies.
The good old days. As Blah Panzer responds.
Finn Marshall suggests an assassinate unit promotion so that a defending unit could be destroyed.
Ew, like a great general or something.
Oh, yeah, great people, yeah.
I mean, it would be interesting if you could use your spies to go into other cities, and particularly their super specialist city, and take out some of those specialists. That would be fun to do to people. Wouldn't be so much fun to have it done to you.
Yes, true. And of course, it's got to be costing a hell of a lot.
Yeah. Well, a civilization revolution, spies will be able to steal great people. I realize it's not necessarily a promotion, but perhaps, I don't know, maybe within Civ 4, a modder out there. I don't know how complicated that would be, but just something, as you said, so that there's some kind of reward for the spy having so many successful missions other than the fact that you still have that spy. Because for me, when it comes to spies, I much prefer the passive espionage effects as opposed to actually building spy units. So perhaps for people like me, if we could actually have promotions, I might be more inclined to build. Spy unit, does whatever a spy unit can. That doesn't quite work.
I'm done with spies.
Uh-oh. Imran's been converted to the enemy.
Shh. So that then brings us to...
Peaks and Ice.
Yes. Otherwise known as Ice and Peaks.
He just has to say it a different way.
What about mountains and snow?
Well, you know, technically, ice is not snow.
That's true, but I couldn't think of anything else.
That's fluffy ice.
Apparently, Uberlaws here wants Peaks and iced terrains to give you certain things, such as with Peaks, they offer skiing, mountain climbing, etc., and thinking that if they're in cities' borders, maybe they should generate some happiness or commerce. And for ice terrain, there's teams in Antarctica doing scientific work and worth a science beaker or two. Now, perhaps, maybe in modern times, if you get some sort of technology, I could see some of that work, I guess.
Why would you work these tiles rather than use a specialist?
Yeah.
There's not enough benefit. They're not at all worth using it.
Well,
yeah, I don't think they could make any of them worth very much, and it wouldn't be worth the trade-off with that it being kind of unbalancing all of a sudden. Oh, look, my mountains are full of gold.
Well, I don't mean full of gold necessarily, but maybe like plus one commerce or something like that.
Yeah, but that's what he's saying, is if you take a specialist off to work a mountain tile, the specialist is worth a lot more.
Yeah.
It's not worth the one commerce, which is probably why they didn't do that.
Could have a worker do it instead.
I think he's looking at it from the point of view of, you get those cities that have those one or two peaks or the near the ice flow, for want of a better term, and he wants to get some resource, something from that square. But part of it's a question of, well, first of all, why do you put the city there in the first place? That's one of the decisions you make when you're playing the game. Peaks, yeah, I mean, they're big mountains. Surely you should get some stone or something from them, but a lot of mountains, the stone that comes from it isn't worth anything. You can't do anything with it. So I think it comes back to one of those in-game choices. The idea of ski resorts and things like that, yeah, look, it's great for the later game. I remember when Warlords was coming out, I was playing, I think it was Amra's mod pack, which had all this extra stuff you could build in cities at different times. But I guess to the point of, when's enough enough? When that lad in the game should just be churning out tanks. Not that I have one set playstyle or anything.
Tanks, stacks of bombers, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the improvements that we have seen for some of our less useful terrain, for example, especially with rivers in and around Tundra, we now have water mills, and now we have levees, courtesy Beyond the Sword. But this comment by Uberlaws about mountains, do they need to be valueless? There might be valueless in terms of being able for a worker to work it for some benefit for the city, but they can be nice natural barriers to help protect your city, so they're not valueless. I built that city close to the mountains because I wanted the whale. I had no idea they were so useless.
He had no idea the whale was so useless either.
Don't knock the whale.
You don't knock the whale knocks you. Anything else in the research lab?
I think we've run out of funding.
And look, all the scientists are going on strike.
Oh no!
Send in the police. Woohoo!
Okay, so yes, mailbag.
Woo-hoo. Mailbag.
And then we received a voicemail message from Michael Lucas Smith in Australia. This is the third time he has called in.
Uh-oh.
But A, he called in via Skype, which I would think if you are any at all comfortable with the internet and Skype have a broadband connection, it's probably the way to go in terms of cost, unless it's actually, or any of our numbers are actually local to you and you prefer that. And he left the most detailed message so far. The message itself ran almost 4 minutes.
Oh, my Lord. Was he drunk?
No, that's JB.
Hi, Polycast. It's Michael from Australia here, currently in Ottawa, Canada. Just coming back with the biggest story about the playing Beyond the Sword and Civ 4 on the Mac. first of all, why you should care about the Mac. You know, PCs are dead.
Wait a second, who is this now?
Well, at least he has a sense of humor.
Yes.
And this is coming from a guy who was a PC guy for a long time. I'm sitting here on my leather desktop running Windows and Mac side by side, and I'm loving it.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, if you're a sucker for punishment.
I have an overpriced piece of crap. Your days are over.
What's love got to do?
What have we told you about singing?
That's quite enough of that.
You've even alienated the guests. Good job, Dan.
That way they don't come back and we don't have to pay them more.
Wait, you pay people for
this?
We get paid for this?
I mean, this coherence mode in Parallels basically makes Windows sit on your desktop like regular Windows with your Mac Windows. It's really cool. And this, you know, MacBook Pro has 2C using it with Intel, PC done. Use a Wii or use a Mac.
Or a Wii Mac?
Anyway, can't believe I'm standing up for Mac like that. I've never been a Mac guy before. So anyway, in build 5.160 of Parallels, actually go back to the start. When Parallels 3 came out, they promised DirectX compatibility and they showed Half-Life 2 running in it. Everyone was really excited. Lots of people went and bought it straight away, only to discover that pretty much all of the games they wanted to play, in my case, Civ 4, just didn't work in it at all. You know, if you turn on DirectX mode and configure it right and turn off all the settings and twiddle with the settings in Civ 4, then you might just get to the intro screen, and then after one revolution of the planet, it would crash. You wouldn't actually get to play the game. So then they build 5.160 came out a couple of weeks ago, and the DirectX support in that has actually been upgraded, and Civ 4 would actually play. However, if you turned off all of the settings down to the lowest resolution, lowest quality of everything, the game would still be very slow. So then I heard that with Leopard, the new Mac OS X 10.5, that there's a beta version of Parallels that actually improves DirectX support again. So I went and bought Leopard. I downloaded the latest Parallels beta build, which is 5.5.4.0, and Civ 4 is now completely playable on the Mac under Parallels.
Yay!
Well, you could have just bought a PC, put the disc in the box, and it'll work.
That, or just buy the Mac version of Civ 4.
Yeah. Those things would make too much sense.
You can play Beyond the Sword in Civ 4, which, of course, the Civ 4 version for the Mac won't give you yet. I think that's why he went to all this effort.
The expose button to see all of the windows and your DirectX running Civ 4 will actually shrink like every other window, and you can pop up Skype and chat with someone at the same time. It's really cool. The quality isn't full quality yet. You can't really play the game in full quality at full speed, and some things do look odd, like the faces of some certain characters will be missing, so you'll just see their gums and teeth and eyes, which is creepy.
Oh no, it's a parasite leader! Oh!
But the game works, so for all those hardcore Civ 4 fans, you don't have to boot into boot camp anymore. Upgrade to Leopard and upgrade Parallels to 5.5.4.0 or whatever the latest beta is, and Civ 4 will work on your Mac.
Lucas, thank you for letting us know and for explaining and letting us know the difference between Parallels and boot camp. Apparently we were criticized for that by someone. I don't know.
We don't care about criticism.
Again, thank you for your voicemail, Lucas. Keep letting us know what's going on in the Mac world, because if you didn't, you would never hear about it on this show. I think there's also a thread on Polton about getting Civ 4 to work on Linux under the Wine distribution, but it sounded like there was also a fair bit of effort. But it sounds like that perhaps you can get better results than what the Mac people were using, which was just 1 second of the intro screen. It sounds like it might be possible that you wouldn't have to wait for a Linux port. But as I said, it requires some setting changes, but those people who run Linux, they like tinkering with those kind of things. So, To see the difference between really hardcore Windows users and Linux users is that when Linux users actually tell their computer to do something, it usually does it. Whereas we Windows users just end up cursing.
That's not why it's called a cursor?
Yeah. Coincidence? We think not.
I can understand him because I'm keep on trying to mute Dan here and it's not working.
So, in other words, the difference between a Windows user and a Linux user. Linux users. Aw, oh, yeah, I got this to work. Windows user. Ah, shit, it still doesn't work.
I got the email, though, and I was like, what the hell is this?
Who's this rough eye guy? Why is he emailing me? Oh, wait, Polycast.
Wait, he's making his way through all the podcasts? What the hell?
Yes. This roughie says, I found your podcast a few weeks ago, and as sad as it sounds, I actually went back and downloaded all of them.
Yes, that is very, very sad.
I'm also sad that, Dan, you did not ask him what was your favorite co-host. We have these polls up. My keyboard got me a vote, so I'm happy about that.
We look at the logs of new users. Imran Siddiqui 1, Imran Siddiqui 2. What's going on?
Multiplying. Run!
If I recall, I finished second to Mackie, so... In your face!
Yeah, whatever. So... He says, slowly making my way through all of them on episode 18 at the moment. Of course, Mackie doesn't like Ruff because he doesn't get her name right, but that's okay. Oh, I guess you're known as Macy now.
Macy.
From the department store.
Yeah. So, Macy's, if you would like to sponsor the show, Mackie will change your username to Macy.
No, I will not.
I responded to this individual. I told him, I said, laugh out loud. In all seriousness, that is one of the kindest compliments we have ever received about Polycast to date. On behalf of the podcast team, thank you for taking the time to let us know. We know that given how much feedback we receive on the show, I think it's a case with human nature generally, is the only time most people say anything is when they have something to bit. So... Let's talk about episode length this time. No, that's actually not. Then this person also followed up.
Yeah, he said that you said, or Mackie said in some forgotten past podcast, that the civic mercantilism stopped foreign trade that you arranged with other leaders. This isn't correct. It stops trade routes into and out of your cities, but doesn't stop you for trading fish for clams with another AI.
Well, knowing me, I probably said trade in the more general sense of meaning the trade routes and not specifically deals like that.
She was talking about the macroeconomic simulation. Tie-in.
Even after I corrected Ruff that it was Mackie, not Macy, now we know why he's referring to her as Macy.
We do?
He was upset, Mackie, that you said what you said and had no intention of calling you by your real nickname. I have an answer for everything.
And usually it is wrong.
And then didn't he have some other comment that was much longer?
Yeah. In the recent discussion about civics for constructing spaceships, you started to talk about the caste system being good to hire great engineers, but then corrected yourself. I think you left with it that caste system wouldn't help the spaceship. Well, caste system is plus one hammers on workshops and would help any workshops that the player might have. I'm currently playing a PBM game, and we have sped through the tech tree, but we are only now thinking about space. I have one tech outstanding. I'm in the process of workshopping all of my towns. Yes, towns. Commerce is not important now. Hammers are. I've been trying to figure out what civics I want to swap for the push to space, so your talk was very timely.
Yeah, I guess I could be wrong, but I thought we had talked about, or someone had mentioned about taking your workers and going over everything. For example, taking your farms, if you had lots of farms, like I usually do, and converting them to workshops, and then some civics would be more helpful.
Yeah, I think we might have been talking about that, though, more in reference to the early game, as to what to do with plane squares early on, if they're not on a river.
Maybe. Another way to go about it? but I wouldn't start building workshops because I wouldn't want to have a reason to switch to caste system because I really don't like it. So, I will not validate its existence.
It's nice when you're going for a cultural victory.
Everyone knows those are a myth. How many times do I have to say it?
It's not a myth.
There aren't. There are no cultural victories.
I point you to the BTS tournament. It's not a myth.
The culture is alive?
The BTS what?
What tournament's that?
Well, then I didn't win one.
No, Dan has claimed your victory.
Hey!
What's a victory? Oh, is that when you win? Oh, cool!
Oh, no! Oh, I've ruined my reputation.
Not really.
You have a reputation?
So, Ruff, I hope you're continuing to listen to the latest episodes, that you haven't burned yourself out by now. He said he was listening to essentially almost one episode a day for a period of a few weeks, and it sounds like he's caught up now.
He's listened to more than I have.
Yes, we know.
Well, you know, if my name's not in the credits, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
It's about Civ. It's a game I hardly play.
Once a year or two.
We know that as well.
I bring it out for Christmas every year.
Comments on episode 31. Which, interestingly enough, in the past few episodes, there have been comments on Poulton, but not on CFC. Which is the total opposite of the way it had been since we started having CFC threads for episodes 18.
It's Mathos' fault.
Yeah, Mathos, after you were on the show, CFC stopped talking about the episodes. I guess they figured, well, Mathos has been on the show, that was all we could expect. That's said and done.
And we have someone that actually posted comments with us today.
I know.
With New Gog here, saying that Joe can out-talk me.
Yeah, he gave you a good run for your money.
JB said, good stuff. While I yawned during the news, I also had a beer.
That makes two of us, JB. That makes two of us. That's why I was recording it, actually.
By the time the stand-up came around, I was having a second beer. Yahoo! And I never thought about disconnecting coal. I might check that out in my current game. Don't know where coal is yet. Raise the fort or coal mine when oil is connected. Raise the road and rail. Rebuild the mine if a workable one. Temporarily a happy camper, but I'm pondering having a third beer, which would be the first time in years.
Polycast drives people to drink.
Yes, Wetter had suggested some slogans, and my favorite of them is Polycast, adding a whole new meaning to Civilization Anonymous.
I like my suggestion.
Surprise.
Of course you do.
Polycast, now more prawn.
And Heraclitus
thinks Mackie should talk even more.
Yeah.
I try to.
Come on, Mackie, talk. So, Mackie, what are your interests?
Where are you from?
How'd you get corralled by Dan to be here?
I was stupid enough to answer as PM, that's how. Yeah.
When we talked about mounted units being underrated, nobody mentioned the powerful flanking promotion in Beyond the Sword, which is one of the only ways to prevent a large stack of catacolts trebuchets from ripping you a new one. How so colorfully put. He also actually commented on moving your capital. He said it might be useful if you have the majority of your cities on a continent 1 and haven't yet moved to continent 2. You can then build Versailles on continent 1 as your continent 2 cities do not have the production yet to beat someone else to it. Then later when continent 2 is filled up, you can move your capital to reduce cost. Yeah.
You seem convinced.
Everyone else is not saying anything because they're too nice to say what they're really thinking. You okay, Mackie? Would you like a drink of water?
I have plenty, thank you.
Would you like a sip of JB's beer?
I've got my own of that, too.
What else is being said here? Oh, yes. Impaler asked, the identity of this death monkey intrigues me.
I kind of have a pretty good guess about that, don't you?
Everyone knows who Death Monkey is. It's a Phyraxian. Jeepers. Come on, people. This past October, Polycast celebrated 12 months since the series' launch. Very shiny. A series of polls are continuing to give you, the listener, a streamlined and direct means to submit feedback on the show and discuss it with other listeners at the same time. In addition to ongoing conversations on favorite Polycast co-host, guest co-host, and episode length, that and polls on favorite segment, favorite extra series, and game or games to cover are also being run individually. You can find the links to these discussions and polls from the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. Look for the survey section, or you can visit the Apolton community forum at apolton.net/forums and look for poll threads that begin with Polycast in the title. Keep on listening, and keep on sieving.
Wow.
It's true.
Yeah, we got mail.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-659, 301-637-POLLY.
For Europe, 44-020-7871-7659, 44-020-7871-POLLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
Seriously, where is the hate mail address?
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on the show, log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. Type more quietly.
Yeah, man. Seriously.
That is nasty.
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
Dancing bears and tutus. And for all of you that don't know, in Civ Rev, apparently there is this shot that Locutus had posted. Apparently in the throne room, you can have dancing bears in tutus.
This is true.
Which is like the coolest damn thing ever.
I'm going to go and buy my next generation console right now.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is we should have sharks with freaking laser beams on their head, and it would be complete. And Kusi, of course, posts, "What the fuck?" How long do you typically spend on a single turn? I go 1 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, 1 to 5.
Myself.
Yep, same here.
There's actually a couple of people that voted for 3 hours.
4 of them say 15 to 20 minutes, which I think is, what are you getting, a beer? Every turn, like, drink! Oh, it's another turn! This drinking game rocks! Like, what? The 3 hours thing is great, though. I mean, you just have to wonder, like, what the hell are they doing? Are they saying hi to every one of their units?
Role-playing every decision they make.
Yes, I love you, Mr. Warrior.
Whoa!
You love me, too? Oh. Let's have conversations.
Not that kind of RPM, Ren.
Oh, sorry. So I like the 4 that have 0 to 1 minute, too, you know? Like in the mid to late game.
I wonder how large their empires are.
It's like Speed Civ 4, you know?
Or MP Civ 4.
It's been a while, at least, since you've been on the show.
Yes, yes.
I think you would like the opportunity to do the closing.
Okay, well, yeah, I can if you like. This was episode 32 of Polycast, the official podcast of the Apolliton Civilization Summit. If you'd just like to say goodbye to Dan.
That's me.
And Mackie.
That would be me.
Say goodbye to Imran.
Bye.
And goodbye to Wooter.
Bye-bye.
And last but not least, to Matt.
Bye.
And goodbye for myself. Thank you.
So now this is kind of an interesting circumstance because both of our guest co-hosts are returning guest co-hosts, so we can't ask the typical question. Well, I guess we can ask it. Would you agree to come back a third time? Or did you finally get the message the second time around? Some people are slower learners.
I'll take that as a no.
Well, I'd love to.
What? All right.
I'll be back.
Record date November 10th, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV Warlords and Beyond the Sword.
Copyright 2007, Apolton Civilization Site at apolton.net.